on.
Blog Talk.
Yes, sir, I'm right here.
If you don't like the nickname Dubstep, the next time you can do the announcement.
No, I'd rather not be Dubstep.
Well, you're just going to have to deal with it, Deadmouth. Okay, Neil, I guess the first thing on the schedule today is we're going to talk about Metroid.
Yes, about the main series. I'm not going to talk about Prime or like the pinball series or, God forbid, other end. That's a can of worms we're not getting into.
Okay, well, anyway, for years I've been wanting to get into Metroid. When I was a kid, I would rent Metroid maybe twice a year when I'd go down to my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was this video store called Rainbow Video right up the street. I think it's a Mexican restaurant or grocery store or something now. But I'd rent Metroid, I'd play it, and honestly, I couldn't figure out where the hell I was going.
I had a friend that got it for one of his birthdays. I remember we used to go to a skating rink for all these birthdays, and he got the old gray card one with the sprite cover, and we couldn't really get that far in the game either. We had to use the Justin Bailey code just to see more of the game. That's how bad it was. I didn't get my copy until it was on the yellow card Greatest Hits collection on the NES for like $10. We got that at like a Kmart.
Right, so anyway, over the years, I've tried to play Metroid again and again. I remember a few years ago when I figured out how I could put emulators on my Dreamcast. Remember that sweet NES disc I had?
Yeah, I do. I didn't have another copy until I got it online, back when Metroid Prime has an extra, and Zero Mission has it as an extra.
Right, I've been wanting to play it, and I couldn't really figure out what I was doing, so... What I ended up doing was, so I kept passing, and then I tried to play Metroid Zero Mission on the Game Boy Advance, and that didn't seem quite safe, but recently I got a copy of it, and I decided to just go through it. And Zero Mission turned out to be a really awesome game.
Most people think it's a very good remake of the series. It's actually one of the better remakes they've done, in terms of actually changing a lot, not just doing the graphic cover-up.
Right, because I think you remember that the time I was there and I was trying to find an energy tank and I'd get lost in places and I saw the energy tank and I'd be like, oh, it's an energy tank. And I'd get that! But, you know, I eventually did finish the game. And, again, it was really good, though. The final fight with Mother Brain, it wasn't so much difficult, it was annoying.
Well, they actually gave her an attack. And the first one, she just kind of sat there and just made a little glitchy sound effect whenever you heard her. But
right,
actually gave her like a big Kamehameha eye blast.
Yeah, I didn't mind that. It was more the fruit rings that they kept shooting at you.
Oh, they did that in the first game anyway.
That's the only
line of defense is just basically blasting you to death with them.
But then you finish that and you get to the second part with Space Pirates.
Yeah,
and
that was added
that
for
little...
Zero Mission.
Right, I thought that was really fun, going through that and playing... getting to the parts, like especially the part when you're having to, when you can't really fight back, you've lost your armor completely, and you're having to hide from space pirates because you can't even damage them, you can only stun them momentarily.
Yeah, some people didn't like it because they felt it was more like a weird force stealth mission, which
yeah,
it basically is.
Well, the thing I liked about that was that it got to the point where you get your weapons back in the hidden bird temple or whatever. And when you get the weapons back, it's like, oh, shit, it's on now. And I went through there and I blew up those space pirates, some of the bitches, like it was no tomorrow.
Can we talk a little bit about the little prehistory that goes in between, before the chronological first game?
What would this be?
They did the backstory a little bit in, like, the manuals and a couple of the mangas they did in Japan. Basically, her backstory where Ridley killed her entire... family and everyone else on this little space station, and she was just left on Zebes with or I think Zebes or something, where the Chozo, basically these alien bird people, that basically infused her with a little bit of the DNA so she can use the magic space space armor they gave her to become a bounty hunter.
That's I was not aware of that.
Yeah, they show a little bit in Zero Mission at the end where basically when she gets her special armor, she has a little flashback of when she was on this planet as a little kid. That's about as much of it. There's not much in the actual game to explain it, unfortunately.
Okay, well, you know, I finished that. What I thought I was going to do right after that was play Metroid 2.
Yeah,
and Metroid 2, I always heard Metroid 2 is a lot more linear.
It is.
It's not quite completely linear, but it's a little easier to track through. And the thing I like about Metroid 2 is, and I don't think it's as effective on the Game Boy player when you put it in, like, color, but the black and white, it feels really cool. To me, it felt like a really low-key sequel, but it ended up being probably the most important game in the series as far as storylines go.
Yeah, there was going to be a colored version, like part of the DX series, like they did with Zelda Link's Awakening, but unfortunately, for some reason, they never did. Like, it was going to be that in one of the Kirby Game Boy games.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, you know, but the thing about Metroid 2 is, okay, I'm playing the first game, and it's one of these things, you know, I don't mind killing the Metroids of Space Pirate, because, you know, I'm defending myself. You know, these are bad guys, and they're doing bad things, but in Metroid 2, you find these Metroids, and you're killing them, you know, and they're not doing anything wrong, they're just defending themselves. Oh, yeah, and apparently it turns out that killing an entire species on a planet, turned out that there are negative consequences.
Yeah, it's just like the Captain Planet, where they killed all the sharks.
Yeah, then all the jellyfish became a big nuisance.
Well, the fun thing about Metroid 2 is that it was technically made by different parts of the groups. It only had, like, I think Gunpo Yokoi is one of the few people that actually did any work with the Game Boy one. So they had different... It had a different composer, and fortunately most of the music's kind of spacious, kind of blippy for the Game Boy. It's only at the beginning song, the actual original theme, and like near the end when it actually gets any stress and pulsing and actual moody music.
Yeah, I really liked Final Fight with Queen Metroid, especially when you could roll up in her throat and lay the bombs.
I'm sure you were liking it once you were getting to the harder forms of the Metroids, where they had the fully evolved Omega Metroids.
Yeah, it was really good, though. Those Omega Metroids were son of a bitches. I'm kind of scared to drop an LMF on internet radio, so I'll just say son of a bitch, because that's pretty common now. But yeah, they were really, I mean, at that point, they were shooting blasts at you. And also the fact that you couldn't shoot them from the bottom now. You had to only shoot them in the face.
Yeah, I played it again once I had a 3DS and got on the little 3DS virtual console. I forgot the fact that after you killed, like, there's only, like, four Omega Metroids. And you actually go through an entire section where there's no enemies whatsoever. And the music just has this one, you know, slight dread music be just going through. And then suddenly... there's a loud sound where there's actually suddenly nine more Metroids. And you're thinking, oh, crap. But luckily, it's only the larval type.
Actually, the larval types are harder than the Omegas.
That's because they're easy to kill, but if they latch onto you, you're pretty much dead unless you can get enough bombs on you. Unfortunately, you need all the help you need.
Yeah, they're son of a bitches. One second, we're having a special guest. All right, that was the king of cartoons. Where were we? Anyway, you get to the end of the game, and you kill it, and I see a baby Metroid, and I honestly thought I had to kill it, and it's like, I can't do it. I can't kill a baby Metroid because I'm out of missiles!
Well, this leads into Super Metroid, which most deem, if not the best of the series, then probably one of the best video games ever made.
Yeah, it's like, it's up there. Yeah, it's definitely up there. I mean, and the thing about it is, the best thing about it, I mean, it really does. It takes everything and does it right. I mean, it has these cool little items like the X-ray that they never bring back. You know, the X-ray items.
Yeah.
where you can look through the wall, things like that. It has the dash button, which is very hard to get used to when you play Fusion afterward without it. Well, I guess that's because Game Boy Advance doesn't have enough buttons.
Yeah, they just have we just had to keep running, and it automatically does it. This is a kind of a return to form in the original game, especially in the fact that you have to go back to the original Planet Z after the distress call, and Ridley stole the final little baby Metroid he got at the end of Metroid 2.
Right, and the best thing is, when you get near the end for the final portion, you're getting ganged up on suddenly a giant larval Metroid burst through the wall. It's inadvertently sucking your energy, but I'm like this. I remember I was playing, I was like this. Holy shit! because I'm like, what the hell? Because, I mean, I'm shooting at it frantically. But then you get to the part of Mother Brain. I'm thinking now, because I didn't know what was going to happen, and you went to a great deal of trouble to shield me from spoilers.
Yeah, you see, I knew this is one of these games that, even though it's as old as it was, it's kind of best to not try to spoil too much of the actual game and story.
So I get the Mother Brain. I'm noticing it's looking a little samey. Now, I've been around the block long enough to know that something's going to happen here. But anyway, I mess up Mother Brain, and suddenly she grows a dinosaur body and becomes Brainzilla. And I mean, and this is like this, and I remember I was watching, I was like this, holy shit, the kids were with me. And Dylan's like, Dylan's freaking out over it. And anyway, we're having the huge fight, and I'm thinking I'm about to kill her, but all of a sudden, the giant baby Metroid bursts in and clamps on the Brainzilla. And it's like it's fighting, and I'm like this, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, holy shit.
Well, a lot of this is basically played in pantomime. There's no dialogue whatsoever past the beginning intro that explains what's happening towards the story.
That's what made it really effective, is that it wasn't actually depending on too much on storyline or anything. I mean, your emotions for the game are built up just through playing it. And when the baby Metroid, I was expecting this, and this is a spoiler for anybody, this is a 16-year-old spoiler. Oh, Jesus, 16 years. Anyway, the baby Metroid dies. And this was upsetting as hell to me, because I thought the baby Metroid survived somehow, because I knew that you had Metroid powers in Fusion.
Well, she technically does, since you kind of have the DNA, and that actually kind of ties into Fusion and Other M, exactly what happens with the baby.
Yeah, Dylan, my 8-year-old nephew Dylan, was very upset by this, that the baby had to die, and he kept trying to think of ways for the baby to live. Neil, do we have, my friend Eric's supposed to be calling in. Has he called in yet?
No, he has not. I should probably send him in to make sure he gets in.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. If he's called in, go ahead and send him in. Or you can go ahead, or if you want to, go on to the instant messenger and just invite him in.
Yes, I guess he's got the info. I'll try to patch him in once it's time. You want to go a little bit into, Metroid Fusion?
Yeah, I'll go into Fusion. The thing about Fusion was, there are some things about Fusion I don't really like. They're not necessarily deal-breakers for me, but to me, they were taking Samus, who's a great female character, like probably one of the best female characters in anything, just because of the fact that she gets business done, she's not mopey or whiny about it. But here they made her very chatty, about her CEO, Adam. And it turned out in Metroid 2 that it turned out that it was a bad idea to kill all the Metroids because it turned out they were a predator on a much worse species.
Well, the reason, technically, the Chozos made the Metroids because they wanted to fight this X parasite because it was basically killing everything, from what I can refer to as the backstory manga. Actually, Metroid actually refers to the phrase Supreme Warrior in the Chozo language.
Okay, Neil, is Eric on yet?
Yes, you want me to patch him in right now so you can do your chat?
We'll do the finish the Metroid discussion next week. Go ahead and patch Eric in.
Okay, patching in now.
Hello, Eric, are you there?
Hey, Victor.
How are you doing?
Okay,
yeah, I can hear you.
So we're talking about Dallas.
Yeah, I've been watching Dallas because about a year ago I started getting the DVD sets, and
yeah,
it's been pretty awesome shit.
Yeah, Fancy started reading reviews from future city council member Miguel Garza.
Yeah, I was reading them, and it turned out it was a really awesome show. I mean, it turned out they interested me enough, and my dad used to watch it when I was younger, because I can actually vaguely remember watching it at my grandparents on Friday nights.
Yes.
But
I watched, yes, as you know, I started watching it in the 90s in the rerun on TNN.
Yeah, that's where my dad watched a lot. He watched it in the afternoons on TNN. It was the only TV show he watched. Like, I think he watched Dallas and he watched Sanford and Son.
Yeah.
Which that's what we call it, television. Well, getting through the show right now, obviously when a show is on for 14 years, eventually it begins to have some hills and valleys in quality. And the thing about JR is that they really started watering him down. This is in season 12 that you notice it more, because JR gets stuck in this town called Haleyville.
Yes, exactly.
It's a hillbilly town that has about 14 people in it, and JR just gets ran through the, he gets put in prison without a trial, he can't even make a phone call, and when he gets out, he marries this girl, and he's happy to do it.
Yes, JR would have that town destroyed.
Yeah, season 3 JR would have dropped the tactical nuke on that son of a bitch. Or he would have bought the town and turned it into and paved it over. And here it's funny though, because you have the moments when he's having the traumatic dreams about it. And it almost seems like JR was raped because he doesn't want to talk about it. Like, JR got back to South Fork and he's like, "Why didn't anybody call and look for me? You said you were fine." I was just saying.
Yes. I mean, this is the JR that told Edgar Randolph that even if he commits suicide, he would tell the public what he's blackmailing him with. So he would definitely want some revenge.
And that wasn't even personal. I mean, you could find tons of downright evil things JR did that they hadn't done anything personal to him. He was just doing that for kicks. And here, and then the sheriff actually comes to Dallas, and JR lets him leave town.
Yes. If that was the only episode people ever saw that storyline, they would think that the sheriff was a good guy, and JR was some city slicker that went down to Haleyville and, well, actually did do bad things, but he did really bad things, I guess. He did legal things, but JR.
Yeah, it's like he was crazy. Then he gets married, and again, this season's been pretty, the only problem with season 12 is that by the end of it, it's very boring.
Yeah, I think season 12...
I still haven't finished watching it. Yeah, I haven't actually finished watching it. I'm stuck on the Mission to Moscow episode.
Yeah, it kind of peters out by the end. I think overall it was a little bit better than season 11, but I think the end of 11 is better than end of 12.
Yeah, 11... Well, the problem with season 11 was that you had this Nicholas Pierce who dominated TV time, and he doesn't even become a regular.
Yeah,
I mean, and this mob storyline was just, I mean, it was probably one of the worst storylines the show did. I mean, it was almost like a Lucy storyline from years before.
Yeah, it's a Lucy storyline. Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't even connect to the main show at all. It's almost like you're watching another show in the middle of Dallas.
Yeah, especially since nothing to do with the show and then nothing afterwards. It seems like ever since I watched the trailer that any time another show tries to do a mob night story, it just seems so, like, PG and fake. I don't know. Kind of like if another show did an oil storyline.
Yeah, it went forever. Then at the end of the season, and again, I don't even know what they're going for, though I honestly think Dallas tries to bury actors on their way out just so the audience doesn't miss them.
Yeah, they did that with Pam, with their scene with Jenna, when she's like, "Don't you know how hard this is on me, that you're knocked up?"
Oh, the whole Ray storyline where Ray's cheating on, and I didn't think you could do a bad Ray storyline, but that storyline with him trying to be a father, and he looks very uncomfortable around teenage girls.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm reading into this, But it looks like he's not comfortable at all. Like, it's somehow the specter of Lucy is always hanging over him.
Yeah, sort of. And I guess in Sue Ellen's final season, she wasn't really buried, but she was just kind of kept separate in a boring storyline.
Yeah, and you really, and the thing about it is, she's so unlikable in those first episodes where she shoots JR 3 times, and she tries to press charges against him.
Yes.
And JR doesn't do anything about it.
And all Sue Ellen basically does with all the other regular characters in the show for the rest of the season is that she'd show up once in a while and say, "Hey, JR, I still hate you, bye."
Yeah, it was amazing. But I like the way the family was actually like when Sue Ellen tried to come to Southport, Bobby's like, "Get the fuck out of here."
Yes.
What the hell's wrong with you? And if they're going to go talk to Miss Ellie like, "Yeah, oh, you shot my son. Yeah, come on in." Now, recently on the Facebook for the Dallas revival that they're doing in May, is that when it's going to start airing?
I think June.
Okay, they did a timeline.
Yeah.
They did a timeline, and it's basically showing everything that happened since the season, since the series finale in 91. And the big thing is that they Man of Steel the two reunion movies.
Yeah, some fans have problems with it. I don't necessarily have a problem with it because War of the Ewings is kind of silly. The second TV movie, first one was kind of okay.
Yeah, it's funny though. I think the biggest problem I had was JR losing all his money in an XFL expansion team.
Yeah, some of it was a little bit too cutesy. Like, I don't know, I guess Cliff investing in Google was okay, but you know what it reminds me of? The Muppet movie, the new one, where they had Scooter working out Google. So I guess it's going to become like a cliche in old 80s properties that come back. Somebody works at Google.
Yeah, it's funny, and the thing about it is, I can't see JR working, I can't see him investing in an XFL team, but yet passing on Google. And it's like, to me, I can see him putting a little bit of money into an XFL team or an expansion football team, but I can see him tying up every dime he has in it.
Yes, exactly. But I guess he just had a really bad 12 years, or longer, I guess, since 91, 20 years.
I was talking to Neil in the car about it, you know, when we were on our way over here, we were prepping for the show, and he said it was one of those type of things that only works in an after-the-fact manner, that if you try to think about it as something the character's actually doing, I'm still excited for the show, but one of my only problems with the timeline, again, this probably won't come up in the show at all, and I'm sure the show will probably just disregard anything if they need to do it later. I thought JR was way too antagonistic toward Miss Ellie.
Yes, he was a little bit harsh with her than he probably would be in the old show. But I don't think he ever really got mad at Miss Sally for a large, long period of time. I mean, in the 11th season, he left South Park for a while, but he never really seemed that bad at her.
Yeah, he only got mad. I mean, he really only got mad at her at times that were kind of appropriate to be mad. Like, he got pissed off when she took down his dad's painting, you know, which, I mean, I can understand that at least, but here, you know, it's like he's almost right. It's like, well, Miss Ellie's sick, the old bitch. You know, it's hard to picture that coming out of the mouth of, you know, the JR we saw on the main show for 14 years.
Yes, and I think she would probably move back with her when she gets back after her husband died, even if you didn't like him.
Neil.
We got about 6 minutes.
Okay, let me ask you, did Brian ever turn up?
No, he did not.
Okay, then. I guess he's busy or something. We'll just keep talking right now. So, one of the things I did like was, I actually do like where they're going with John Ross, and at this point, I almost do expect Christopher to be the evil one.
Well, yeah, the interesting timeline that J.R. kept saying that he seemed like he liked Christopher, but then some of the promos he's saying how he's not adopted, not a real Ewing, but maybe there'll be a shocking surprise that maybe he's JR's son after all.
That's what I'm thinking. They hinted at that one time in season 12 where JR seemed to really think that, like in the back of his mind, he still thinks Christopher is kind of his kid. That was probably one of the things I liked from season 11 when that girl, you know, Jeff Faraday's sister, I can't remember, Lisa Faraday.
Lisa Alden.
Yeah. And J.R. was going to let you take Bobby's boy. I was just doing this trying to get some leverage on him.
Even though Bobby didn't really appreciate that much, and he tried to choke him to death in the pool.
He tried to drown him in the pool, and I like that Sue Ellen was the only person that thought, you know, oh my God, the children are watching this. You know, when you're having to depend on Sue Ellen to be the reasonable adult.
It just reminded me of the scene year before when Pam was acting, when Christopher and John Ross were racing, and Pam's like, John Ross cheated.
Yeah, it's like, he's 8 years old, or how, he was like, it's like, you're a grown woman. And JR was the one trying to be, and JR and Bobby were the ones being reasonable about it. You know, kids fight, that's what they do. But yeah, that whole scene right there where he tries to drown JR, it's one of those things, I don't even think it's the worst thing JR ever did to Bobby.
Yeah, what do you think the worst thing JR ever did to a family member was?
Are you still there?
Yeah.
You want to talk about the little cop-out they did? They used to do all the little cop-outs in between commercials. Like, oh no, did the kids shoot each other?
Oh, yeah. Do you remember the episode when they showed in the preview of the show, Christopher has a gun shooting it?
Yeah.
And they did this, and they did it very cheapy, though, making it sound like, did you kill the kid or something? Did they come back for a commercial, and he only shot a window?
Yeah.
And I like how Clayton, as a parent, is not very good at discipline, because the kids are crying, and it's like this, he's like this, I didn't mean to, and Clayton's like, I know, son, here's $20.
Yeah.
Sorry you tried to kill a kid. Here, have some ice cream.
Oh, yeah, and another thing they're doing, another thing kind of got in, you warned me about this, is they're doing this Clayton amnesia storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't even show what happened to Clayton. All of a sudden, they just said he got lost, he come back, he doesn't know who he is.
I just kind of skip that one, because it's irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could do that, but the way I watch TV is, I don't skip anything. You know, it's like, I'll watch anything. I did fast-forward through a few of the Sue Ellen movie segments, and I'm still trying to figure out, because I know how the storyline ends, I'm trying to figure out how much money she pissed away on this.
I don't even know why she thought anyone would want to see that movie.
Yeah, it's one of these things. I like how they credited the guy playing JR in the credits. They put JR with quotation marks.
Yeah.
I wonder, do you think the movie got a direct-to-video release like in the late 90s or something?
She should just release it on a new series. She should just release it on YouTube or something.
Yeah, it's like they should do this where somebody put it direct-to-DVD. Okay, we're about to be out. It was good having you here, Eric.
Thanks.
Tune in next week where hopefully we find Brian Fowler. We finish talking about Metroid, and I'll probably have Eric back to talk more about Dallas. See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.